Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again for another edition of Health Talks with Dr. Trin. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you a way to healthier living today by talking to those who are, well, pioneering a path for all of us with that pioneer pathfinder himself, Dr. Trin. How are you, sir?
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another Thursday. Yeah, I'm excited today to bring on our special guest, Dr. Timothy Jennings from Tennessee, right? Psychiatrist, international speaker, author, and has an organization that involves the brain, the mind, and I believe faith as well is somehow integrated to all that.
Well, yeah. Welcome, Dr. Jennings, to us here. You're coming to us where? From the cloudy area of Chattanooga, Tennessee today here.
Yeah, cloudy today. I'm glad to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a little cloudy in Southern California. At least it's overcast for now here. So we share that in common here. You share some other things in common. You do a faith-based medical missionary group. Is that a correct way to put it forward?
Yeah, I am a clinician in private practice, but I also have a 501c3 Christian organization I founded in 2010 called Come and Reason Ministries, where we produce materials that are designed to help people develop their discernment skills, integrate Christian and biblical principles to science and neuroscience, and ultimately make decisions that help their brain function in the healthiest way and their relationship function in the healthiest way.
Wow. Well, that's quite a tack thing to tackle this morning. So the overall topic today is aging brain. How do we get your psychiatrist? Is it simply mind tricks? Is it simply positive living? Is it simply using your brain in a different way? Or is it about strengthening your brain in some way, eating healthier, changing habits? I don't know. Let's open the discussion. How do you lead to a healthier brain?
So it's not mind tricks. It's reality. It's how reality works. And my approach to this is understanding the what I call design laws. You might call them the laws of health, the laws upon which health and life operate and function. And as you harmonize with them, you promote better health. If you deviate from them, you undermine your health and well-being. And those are physiological in nature. So they will include things like sleep, exercise, diet. There's a whole bunch of very specific things you can do that will help to maintain brain wellness as we age. But they also include principles or laws that govern relationships. There's certain things you do in relationships that are quite damaging to your not just relationship, but when the relationship is distressed, it has a physiological effect on your brain and body and can accelerate dementia. Well, worship, unhealthy worship, has a negative effect on brain development, neural circuitry, and can accelerate mental decline. And psychological processes, the way we think of the patterns of our thoughts, our brain reacts to all these things. And so understanding those principles, teaching how health and what health is built upon, people can make decisions then to move themselves down paths of health that maintain their wellness as they age.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot to tackle. So let's see if we can take it apart. We'll take some questions this morning, and because there's a lot in there to investigate.
So as we're coming out of this pandemic, as we're coming out of this, assuming that we're going to come out of it well, and you know, there's not going to be another big resurgence of coronavirus, I've chatted with many, many folks. Some are very excited to take off their mask and to enjoy society and the world and things of that sort. Others are still very afraid. They don't trust yet, whether it's the CDC or Dr. Fauci. Others are still very afraid, and they plan to keep their mask on for a good amount of time. What is it with the mindset that allows some, you know, in the same exact conditions and the same data with around COVID and the same numbers, why is it that some people are excited with that perception that we're free, we can go back and do our stuff, and some people are still very fearful? There's a perception. There's a difference in perception at the same exact circumstances.
And that and does that perception impact their health?
You honed in on one of the core elements that accelerate, that contribute to illness, accelerate aging, contribute to dementia, and that is fear. And to the degree we have fear from any cause that is chronic in nature, we're not talking the acute alertness when somebody's running a traffic light that just gives you that adrenaline surge to take an emergency action. We're not talking about that kind of an anxiety or fear. We're talking about chronic worry and fear. When we stay chronically fearful, it activates the immune system, which kicks up inflammatory factors, which undermine physical health, as we know about stress, ulcers, and heart attacks and strokes. But also that is directly impact on insulin sensitivity, increasing your risk of obesity, diabetes, which then has a negative impact on our brain, turning off neurotrophins. We lose brain volume, and it directly drives both depression and dementia. So chronic fear is our problem. And so one of our past presidents, FDR, said, there's nothing to fear except
fear itself. Yeah, right.
Okay. Exactly. So the bigger problem we've had around the world is not the little microscopic virus. The bigger problem that the world has had is this consumption of fear that has been so destructive to people and resulted when we have fear in our brain, what happens with that is that it impairs rational and reasonable thinking and problem solving. And people react in self-protective ways, ways that are actually anti-love, anti-altruistic, end up fracturing relationships. People end up isolating and distancing from their significant supports. Multiple studies over decades have shown that when you're socially isolated, you have higher mortality rates. You can't fight illnesses as well. You have more cancer rates. You have more depression, more dementia. So it's significantly destructive to us when we react on fear to make impulse fear-based decisions that are contrary to the actual principles of health, which is what's happened worldwide related to this. You've asked, why are some people ready to get back out there and some people still responding to fear? I will tell you, much of the fear is driven by misinformation, by falsehoods, by propaganda. It's not being driven by actual science or evidence. And what's happened with this whole COVID thing is we have not handled it medically. We have handled it politically for political power purposes, not simply medically. And we're still doing that right now today. And that's what's driving a lot of the fear. So we want people to have freedom back. We must present truth and facts that empower people to be able to make intelligent decisions over themselves instead of keeping them in a state of misinformation where they only have to trust some authority to tell them the answer.
What is the basis behind fear? I mean, fear, God created that sense of fear, right? So that we don't touch hot fires and burn ourselves or fall off a cliff, right? When do we take fear too far and how do we take it back?
So my view is that God did not create the fear. From a Christian worldview and from a biblical worldview, as soon as Adam and Eve sinned, they ran and hid because they were afraid. Fear is part of the infection. Perfect love casts out all fear. What you described about the hot stove or a cliff, that is alertness, and you can have alertness and awareness without actual fear. There are people, in fact, you may know Mohawk Indian people genetically have a preponderance to not have fear of heights. They often end up being iron workers. In the day of the Empire State Building and the towers, they would be the ones to be up there high, thousands of feet in the air, walking.
Never heard that. I never heard that.
Nets, and they didn't have any fear of the heights. Their lack of fear did not cause them to jump off the heights. They didn't need to be afraid. In fact, people who have fear of heights will be more likely to freeze and fall. So it's not that the fear actually is protective in those circumstances. The fear actually makes you more likely to have an injury or to fall. So I don't believe fear is actually part of God's design. It's an infection, and it works. And the primary action that fear drives people toward is what we call in the scientific community calls survival drives. Me first.
Right.
Kill or be killed.
Fight or flight. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Fight or flight, which is the antagonistic to love, friend. So love steps in the harm's way to protect others. Fear causes us to throw somebody else in harm's way to protect ourselves. These principles are antagonistic and they war in our hearts. So agencies that are inflaming fear are working against the agencies of love.
So having said that, I don't want to be a bomb thrower this morning. I tend to be a little more left of center than some maybe, but I don't see anybody not pushing fear, left, right, or center, media, leaders, church leaders. I'm a good Irish Catholic. You know, there's an awful lot of fear that's propagated in the name of faith. There's an awful lot of fear propagated in the name of political parties. Certainly there are talk radio and internet consumption is built on fear. If you're not afraid, you're not coming back.
So well said and well identified. And what you've identified are the powers and the forces of the enemy. When Satan took Jesus to the mountain to tempt him, he showed him all the kingdoms of the world, not 80 or 90% of them, all the kingdoms of the world. All the kingdoms of the world operate on the principle of threat and infliction of punishment that incite fear to control masses. That's what they all do. So political parties will consistently manipulate through fear. And sadly, the church that came out of the Dark Ages was a political organization, not an organization that Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within you. So it's not an organization that came out of the Dark Ages that was designed primarily to change hearts, to love their fellow men. The church came out as a political organization to control states and nation states. And they used the very same methods to incite fear through threat. And they would send their people off to the crusades and did lots of irrational things, including doctrinal things that were designed to incite fear, because you can manipulate people when you make them afraid. You will get them to surrender liberties in order to make themselves feel more secure if you can make them afraid. And so you're exactly right. Much of the religions of the world and the states of the world use this, but it's antagonistic to the way God's kingdom works.
Wow. Yeah, so the church is at fault as well.
Yes.
Everybody feeds into fear. Fear works. You know, I worked in politics on a couple of campaigns. I worked on the late, great Marine Reagan's campaign when I was sort of a liberal Republican for a while. And I just found that no matter how much positivity we tried to put forth, how many positive goals, positive plans, positive ideas, it was the negative ad. It was the fear. It was the irrational over the rational that inevitably worked. And everybody says, I hate it. Everybody says, I don't like it. But it works. You know, why is fear such a powerful, easily potent? Why is love so hard to generate and fear so easy to fall back to?
From a Christian worldview, it's because neurobiologically we were altered. We are not as God designed Adam and Eve. When they chose to sin, what they did is they changed their constitution. Their primary motive prior to sin was love. After they sinned, their primary motive was fear and survival drives. And then we are born in sin, conceived in iniquity. We're born biologically wired to have these fear or survival drives. And that's why we have to be, Christian view, reborn with new motives. So without a external power of love giving us new love desires in our hearts, our automatic instincts are consistently me first, fear-driven threat assessment. And that's why we're so easily manipulated in this way.
We go for it. Like Pavlov's dogs, they ring the bell and we go for it here.
I would say that, you know, even beyond the issue of COVID, it is me first threat assessment, you know, fear driven drives every issue in life besides COVID. It drives whether we are sometimes successful in life because fear may hold us back from taking the next step to getting a better career or, you know,
healthy relationship or whatever.
Relationships and things of that sort. A lot of it is fear driven because the mind is all about preservation as opposed to risk averseness, right? As opposed to taking some risks actually that may be healthy, like getting a, you know, going out.
No, you're exactly right. And that's why the Bible says that the things of God are foolishness to the things of the world, but the things of the world are foolishness. It makes no sense in the world's view that the more you give, the more you receive. The less you have. The more you hoard that's how you get more. So it actually makes no sense to be a giver if you want to get more. You have to hoard it. So selfish motives don't make sense at all. Loving motives don't make sense at all to the people who are driven by the fear perspective. And that's exactly what we see in the world today. And that's why it has to have a conversion experience or new motives that come outside of the natural fear-based human heart in order for it to actually make sense.
You're presenting a worldview that rings so true to me here, and yet you're doing it from a biblical-based position. And many in our audience, we live in a society now where half of Americans say, what's your religion? I got none. Not to do a play on Catholicism, but the nuns are growing. Why is that message of love that Christianity is so based on not resonating or drawing people to it? I'm not saying it's not just Christianity, all this. It's love isn't the attraction right now here. It's certainly not filling the pews. It's certainly not populating the churches.
Yeah. So my understanding of the root bifurcation that came in Christianity is when people stopped seeing God as creator and his laws as the protocols on which reality are built, laws of physics, law of gravity, laws of health, including the moral laws, law of love, which the God of love built as the basis of life, the principle of giving. Every breath you take, you give away carbon dioxide to the plants give oxygen back to you, a never-ending circle of giving upon which life is actually built. You are free, if you want to transgress that law. You can take a plastic bag, tie it over your head, and hoard your carbon dioxide to yourself, but the wages of that is death. That's reality in God's kingdom across all of his laws. That's how they work. Mm-hmm. But the church in the Dark Ages rejected that view of law as design protocols for health and life and replaced it with a human government view of law of made up rules that require external authorities to police them and then punish rule breakers. And therefore, the sin problem is a legal problem. We're in trouble with the ruling authority who is the source of inflicted death upon us. And we have to do something to him to get him not to kill us. And therefore, we practice those same methods. And we think it's actually righteous to go out and pass more laws to punish people who don't live the way we want. And this is why there's fighting back and forth politically constantly, because justice in our world is not about converting hearts to love each other. Justice is about punishing the people who don't believe or practice the life the way we practice it. It's a gross corruption.
Wow. There's a lot in there. We're gonna have some fun with this tomorrow. I'm anxious to hear some from our audience here. Is love the answer? And is love under attack in society here? I grew up in the peace and love era of this, at least it wasn't totally peace and love, but there was peace and love purported in the 60s. You know, the hippies, the let's love, let's Gandhi of nonviolence and Martin Luther King. There was a real, whatever force you wanted to identify with, love was seemed to be on the ascendancy. Now, I'm not saying this wasn't a turbulent period and a fightful period. In many ways, it was more turbulent than anything I've ever seen. But it seems like, there is that just a fight between the light and the dark? Or is does love go through phases in our lives here where love is the answer and then love, no, it's about me first and it's all about me and screw you?
What you described the 60s and 70s was not love. It was sentimentalism. And sentimentalism and emotionalism often get labeled as love when it becomes permissive to let anybody do whatever they want.
Right. But if it feels good, it's okay.
You know the old saying, friends don't let friends drive drunk?
Right.
The friend who takes the keys from the drunk friend, by taking the keys and risking their anger and hostility, that is an act of love. Setting healthy boundaries. Grandma who's got bad arthritis and it hurts to walk across the living room, we do not love grandma if we buy her a motorized wheelchair for her house. Because what we do is we take away her exercise and she will then accelerate her decline as her muscles atrophy. That is not an act of love to simply relieve her discomfort for walking. We want to keep her healthy. She has to walk even if it hurts. And so love has to understand how reality and health works, and we use our activities and energies to help intervene in ways that bring people the greatest health, wellness, and autonomy. The 60s and 70s were permissiveness that resulted in telling everybody anything you want to do is okay, even if it's destructive to you. So smoke as much dope as you want. We'll love you. Yeah, we'll love you, but your brain will be damaged and you will become dysfunctional.
Right.
So if we love you, we're going to educate you that smoking causes disease and you have the freedom to do it, but you can't maintain health while you do it. And that's across the board.
So if fear is an abnormal mind trick, what are some practical steps to overcome this abnormal mind trip? Just from a practical perspective, as a psychiatrist, does religion have to be part of this step? Do you have to be a Christian to overcome fear? I mean, how do you do it as far as, you know, just a patient coming in?
So the way our brains work, our brains respond to what our minds think and the actions and behaviors we choose, what we read, what we watch, what we spend time thinking about, what we believe, who we socialize and engage with, our brains will change and rewire based on those experiences. So study, Newberg and his group took individuals 65 years of age and older, had them meditate 12 minutes a day on a God of love for 30 days. Prior to the meditation, they did measurement of the part of the brain where we experience altruism and empathy called the anterior cingulate cortex. They did baseline measures of heart rate and blood pressure and standardized memory testing. At the end of 30 days, those who meditated 12 minutes a day on a God of love had larger anterior cingulate cortex, love circuits. And the way our brains work, when your anterior cingulate cortex love circuit fires, it sends a calming signal down to your amygdala, your fear circuitry. They had lower heart rates and blood pressures, perfect love, casting out fear, neurobiology. And they also had 30% improvement in memory testing all within 30 days. Then they had another group meditate on an angry God or a punishing God for 30 days. No benefit. So just simple meditation or worshiping a God. This is my book, The God-Shaped Brain, was all about showing the neurobiology behind the view of God that you hold. Just believing in God is not sufficient for health. Only the God of love, an altruistic, compassionate, gracious God, is healing to us. An angry, punishing, wrathful God is damaging neurobiologically, relationally, and physiologically to us. So a practical step, reject the fear-inducing God construct and embrace a benevolent, loving God construct. Spend time meditating, thinking about, worshiping that God, and then practice those principles of love in your life. That's physiologically healing.
Certainly, there has been a lot written. I've just read something recently where somebody said it's almost like there are two gods in the Bible. There's the Old Testament God of wrath and fear, and then the New Testament version of love. How do you rationalize? How do we handle those
two? Those?
Yeah, right.
You're right. You're asking all the awesomest questions. So good. Man, these are great. You're exactly right. That is taught, and it's a complete fraud, and it's a complete lie. It's because of gross misunderstanding of the history of what's happening and what's being described in scripture. I'll give you a simple example. The flood. If we believe the Bible account of the flood and killing all but eight people, people say, oh yeah, God was mad. God was angry. He's killing the world. He's punishing.
Right.
No, no, no. If we believe the biblical account, as soon as Adam and Eve sinned, without in Genesis 3, the Messiah is promised. You're going to die, except I'm not going to let you. I'm going to send my son. I'm going to send the seed of the woman who's going to crush the serpent head. Messiah is coming. But without that Messiah, there's no salvation. All humans die. 100% of humans die without Messiah. That's the Bible perspective. And then what unfolds is Satan doesn't go on vacation. He begins trying to stop the plan, stop the Messiah from coming. Well, how could he do that? Well, God is not going to have Jesus born to a woman who is evil in character or force a woman against his will. He has to have a righteous woman who's willing to be the mother of Jesus. So how about if Satan gets every human being to harden their heart permanently against God and won't work with him? He blocks the plan. All humans die. So at time of the flood, the scripture says there's only one righteous man left on the earth and his family. Everybody else is hardened. And so what do we see at the flood? Do we see God angry and mad, or do we see God therapeutically intervening to keep open avenue for Messiah because he loves us and he wants to send his son to save us? And so this is not an act of a mad God. This is an act of a sad and heartbroken God who has to take this terrible action and excise a necrotic cancer in order to save all who are willing to be saved. And every story in the Bible is very much like this. God therapeutically acting, but it's been misrepresented by an enemy who wants to propagandize it or twist it or give fake news about it in order for people to misunderstand what God's actually doing and who he is.
I certainly grew up with a fearful God, you know, don't do this, a mini tree. And maybe I don't mean to offend anybody, but that's my perception of many evangelical kind of churches, you know, the preaching of hell and damnation from the pulpit. It's all about you're going to hell. It's all about sin. It's all about God's punishment and God's wrath that he's going to bring down on the world. There's a lot of that.
No, you're exactly right. Identifying exactly right. And I call that a gross confection and corruption of the gospel message. This is misunderstood by people who misrepresent it. And why do they do it? Because they read scripture through the lens that God's law functions like human law, a system of rules that if you break them, the ruling authority is required by law and justice to use his power to punish and torture.
Absolutely.
Rather than viewing it through the lens of God's laws are the laws upon which life are built. And once we broke them, we have a terminal condition. We're dying. And God is sending his son to be the remedy to heal and restore us back into harmony, to put his law in our hearts and minds, to fix it. That's what the real gospel message, but it's been perverted by this imperial Roman construct of law.
What about this lens? Like, we all look at life from specific lens, right? I may look at life with an optimistic view lens. Somebody else can see a life
through rose-colored glasses, right?
Or somebody sees life with these lens and the glass is always half empty. How do you replace the lens or have on correct lenses to view all your information and data coming in?
Another great question. So metaphor I give my patients is I ask them to think about their primary language. Now, I only speak one language. I speak English. Many people have multiple languages, but not me. I speak English. And I ask people, your primary language, how did you come to speak your language? And they have to think about it. It's not genetically pre-programmed. If you're adopted at birth to some country, they speak some other language, you would have grown up speaking that. You didn't make a choice to learn that language. I didn't make a choice to speak English. I assimilated that from my childhood, from my environment. And so English now becomes a filter. Everything I think, I never get up in the morning and go, today I'm going to think in English. I never do that. It's always on and everything gets filtered through it. English is not the only filters that we upload from childhood that we never purposely choose. Our environment will teach us other things, religious views, whether it's godless or God worldview, racist worldviews, or whatever. We assimilate these things before we actually have the ability to differentiate whether we want to or not. And then by the time we make it into adulthood, like with me and my English language, I never actually get up each day and think I'm going to think in English. I always do. Mm-hmm. But I have the ability, if I want to learn a new language. I could study it. I could immerse myself, move to that country, immerse myself in it, practice it every day. And then in time, I would be able to think in a new language. That's how you have to filter. You think about people who have changed their worldview on God or godlessness, either side of it. How did that happen? It didn't happen usually in a moment. It happened through multiple life experiences, ideas, constructs, books, influences, people over the time, idea after idea, thought after thought, slowly changing a little bit until one day they make a decision. I'm going to start thinking about it more this way than that way. And they build then on that new worldview.
I would totally tell you that what resonates with me is, and I loved my mother dearly, my late great mother, but she came from a world of fear. That's what she was raised in, the depression and other things. And so every time from the littlest child, I'd reach her something and she'd be careful, look out. Are you sure you're going to do that? And as I got older, I'd say something, I'm going to try this. Sometimes she's like, okay, but she was always presenting the other side. And I know she was doing it to protect me, she thought. But all she did is create this constant thing of evaluating what's going to happen here. What's the worst that can happen? This kind of fear of every choice. I had to hesitate before I leaped. I didn't just leap into the world. Everything I had to stop and think about. And I had to think about something bad that might happen out of it here. Are you really happy that? Is that really what you want to do? Should you really be doing doing this. And I thought, how horrible. You know, so many times in my life, I did have to go through therapy once and somebody sort of point this out to me. I had this kind of worldview of hesitancy. I think many of us are bright. And as a parent, it's hard not to do that, not to say, okay, you know, be careful when you cross the street, instead of, yeah, go see what's over there.
You know, that's a great description you had. It's just like how you learn language. Your mother didn't set out to didactically instruct you to be hesitant in doing things. It was the experience of how that process unfolded in your life over and over again that conditioned you to approach life that way. That's how we often get most of the filters. Most of the filters are not primarily, at least initially, didactic in nature. Right. They are experiential in nature. Right. And this is how we end up having them. And as an adult, once we make it into at least late adolescence, but certainly into adulthood, we have the ability to step back and begin doing some introspection, reflecting on our filters, inquiring and challenging some of the assumptions and biases and presuppositions we have. I can tell you one of the terrible things that's happening in society today is that kids and the populace are being conditioned with a terrible set of fraudulent and false and destructive filters and assumptions and belief systems, where they will take a truth and they will turn it into falsehoods that sound virtuous. For instance, here is a truth. As God designed us, and the Bible teaches that every person should be fully persuaded in their own mind, meaning that you have your own individuality, your own ability to think and reason, and you have the freedom to decide for yourself what you're going to believe. That's a truth. That gets turned into the lie that because you have the freedom to decide whatever you believe, therefore, all beliefs are equally healthy. They're equally valid. They're equally good. Your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth. Everything's truth.
Right.
That is a lie. Well, you have the freedom to believe what you want to believe, and you can choose it. Not all beliefs are truths, and not all beliefs are equally healthy. There are some really destructive things being taught out there as truths that are completely fraudulent, lies, and destructive. And people need to learn how to differentiate those.
And we've talked about it on the show a little bit. I'll ask Dr. Trin this in our audience here. You know, we seem to, I'll get on my stump for a second. I think we live in a world, as you said, where all truth is relative. So my feeling is just as good as your facts. Your facts are only as, if I believe, so whatever it is, left, right, or center, we're always putting out these things as fact, as true. And then people say, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. And that's okay. I have the right to not believe something. And that's as valid as you believe. And you say, but here's the scientific data. Here's the studies. Here's the thing. You go, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. COVID, all these things, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, you get an awful lot of people walking around the world just saying, I don't believe it. I don't, on the left, I don't believe that any vaccines are good. On the right, I think this is all fake and phony and overblown. And then you try and say, well, here's some statistics. Here's some science. Science, I don't believe in science. Science is just another voodoo. You know, how do we get out of this? And it starts, I think, with what you're saying, where everybody's views are just as accepted as anything other fact that you're going to give me here.
So one of God's design laws, how reality works, is the law of exertion. If you want something to get stronger, you must exercise it. Because if you don't use it, you
lose it.
Yeah. That includes thinking, reasoning, and critical thinking skills. And so in Hebrews 5:14, it says the mature are those who develop by practice the ability to discern right from wrong. If you don't practice critical reasoning skills, you won't be able to think your way out of a bag. If you don't practice math, you won't do math problems. You don't practice your instrument, you can't play music. Anything you want to do well, you must practice at and exercise those abilities. And if you do, they expand and grow. One of the things that happens in our society with these types of approaches, your truth, my truth, is shuts down reasoning, it shuts down thinking, it shuts down cause and effect, testing, evaluating, concluding. And so people just believe whatever, and therefore they become less capable of thinking for themselves. So if we want people to actually be able to do this, we must challenge them, and we present truth, biblical evidence, in love, leaving people free. This leads to what I call autonomy. People develop their ability to be self-governed, last fruit of the Spirit. They can govern and direct themselves. This is a philosophical approach to life that I practice as a physician. I don't take control of my patients' lives. I educate them on why I think this course and treatment and intervention would be therapeutic for them. I give them the information, the risks, the benefits, the side effects of both the intervention and not getting the intervention, and leave them free to make up the decision. I don't want to take that medicine. I don't like that side effect. Okay, you don't have to. Here are the potential risk consequences to you. It's your life. I respect your autonomy. In conflict today in our society with paternal paternalism. Paternalism is the idea that the few people are smarter and wiser and know better than the rest of us poor, pathetic people who can't think for ourselves. And they should be able to tell the rest of us how to live our lives like parents tell little children. And it doesn't matter what we think or what we want. They're in charge and they set the rules and they'll spank you and set you to your room with a mask on if you don't do what they tell you to do. And this is the way our society has gone here recently. And how do they get people to comply with that? By inciting fear. If you don't, you could die.
And I hate, again, I don't want to offend your views here, but I see that same thing being pushed on the right. I know it's everybody attacks the left for, you know, nanny societies and telling people, and I can see some of that. But I also see the truth is not being told on the right either. So many churches, so many right-wing politicians, it's all about listen to me. Ignore it what you hear. Only I can tell you the truth. Oh, I have the way. I have the word. And it's not based on reason. It's based on obedience. It's based on compliance. It's based on fear.
So the United States Constitution was set up for the purpose of not establishing human rights, not giving us human rights, but restraining the three big powers in the world from encroaching on our rights. And the three big powers that were restrained by our Constitution were the power of the government itself, the power of the church, that you're identifying, and the power of the aristocracy, which is big business, the shipping magnates and the land
power, the money.
Today is Amazon and Disney and NBC and Google and Microsoft and Apple. These are the aristocracies today. And our Constitution was set up to restrain the powers from encroaching and taking upon our individual liberties and autonomy. And what's happened, as soon as the Constitution was established, it began to be assaulted over the last 250 years to slowly encroach upon and give these institutions back the ability to take away our fundamental human rights, inalienable rights given to us by our Creator. And that's what you see happening in our society today. And one of the ways they do that, in fact, the founders of our country said the only way our form of government can succeed in restraining these powers is with an educated electorate.
Absolutely.
If people become uneducated with these principles involved, then the powers will be able to manipulate the people to have their own freedoms taken away from us. And that's what we have happening in our society today, a grossly uneducated populace who think anything you believe is true, that the government, by passing more laws, can give you more freedom. Think about that. They can't give you more freedom by passing more laws. By giving more restrictions, you somehow have more liberty. It's really, but that's what people think today because they don't actually have not been educated in how reality works or the principles that our Constitution is founded.
Well, Dr. Trin, certainly, you're certainly into educating people and trying to
very thought-provoking
convert people through education.
Yeah, definitely. Correct me if this is the pathway of how we think and behave today. Our thoughts lead to our feelings lead to our actions lead to the results that we get in life. It starts with thoughts, feelings, actions, and results. If that's the pathway of human thought, how do we change thoughts or behaviors or feelings that may not be healthy? Is it at the thought level? I mean, how do we...
Where's the point of change? Because I'll expand upon that for a second.
Is it the behavior? Because if we legislate, we're legislating not necessarily thoughts or feeling. We're just legislating behavior.
Right.
And this is wrong. Or at what point do we create or do we insert new programs that perhaps may lead to healthier?
Let me expand on that for 1 second and you can answer. I think that what you're asking is, if I hear you correctly, is where's the easiest point of change? Do we just say, I can't change your thoughts and I can't change your feelings, but I can sure as hell try and legislate or condemn or force you to change your behavior? Any institution, government, business, religion, it's all about controlling your behavior here because we've given up the fact that we can change how you think or how you feel. You can't argue somebody's feelings. I don't feel that's true. Well, I've never found anybody that you can tell them their feelings are wrong. That's the way I feel. Well, it's like a little kid. I'm scared. Well, there's nothing to be scared about. Well, that's the way I feel. And then that's the way we act based on that feeling. So where is the point of change? Is it the behavior? Is it the thought? Or is it the feeling that we try and...
So both of you have just demarcated the difference between human governments of this world, evil governments, if you want to put it that way, because they're all part of Satan's kingdom, which are focused on behavior, and the kingdom of God, which Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within you. And if you look at all the metaphors of scripture, I will write my law on your hearts and minds. Create in me a clean heart, O God, renew a right spirit within me. We have the mind of Christ. We have circumcision of the heart by the Spirit. We have the heart of stone removed, the heart of flesh put in. The whole gospel message is actually about changing the thoughts and feelings, not the behaviors. When the thoughts and feelings change, we are reborn in the inner person, then the behaviors change. Make a tree good and its fruit will be good, Jesus said. Okay? Human governments and the historic Dark Ages church left that behind, and they only focus on controlling behaviors, which do not change hearts, and actually they incite rebellion. When you try to, you know, what's the old saying? A person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. When you try to conform people's behaviors that have not been persuaded that it is right for them to do, it instills rebellion, or it destroys individuality. They become passive shadows that no longer have an individuality and just go along to avoid consequence, which you find in many communist countries after a couple of generations where the populace loses the will to do anything other than avoid being punished. But you will never get that. So
or any authoritarian government, left, right, or center. I mean, if authority rules, then you're just trying to keep out of trouble here.
That's where Jesus said, you know, the truth and the truth will set you free. And so the truth enters our mind through our reasoning capacities and our ability to discern. James chapter 1 says that no one should say God tempts because God doesn't tempt anyone. Each one of us are tempted. We're dragged away and enticed by our own evil feelings. So the devil plays in our feelings to tempt us, where the truth will set us free. And we've all had the experience. I know you can probably think of examples where you're new in your mind. You are completely persuaded on evidence what the healthy action for you, but you had feelings that tempted you in a different direction. Okay. And then you had to choose. If you go with the feelings, you will damage yourself. You will injure. You'll have loss of self-esteem, self-worth. You feel guilty. You feel shame. If you go with the truth, you will actually strengthen yourself. You will have greater respect for yourself. Your confidence will grow. Your self-worth and esteem will grow. And so this is the battle we all battle within ourselves. And we only have success as we become lovers of truth and apply the truth to our life. But you're exactly right. Systems of this world do not care about your truth. They don't care about your beliefs. They only want to control your behavior.
Conformity. We're all looking for conformity. Follow me. I have the way.
And they manipulate.
Don't listen to any others.
And how they incite fear, they manipulate through fear, through undermining truth and damaging your discernment ability. People who want to control you don't want you thinking and don't want you to be self-controlled.
Right.
They want you to be controlled by them, so they will undermine your thinking ability.
Well, I see that as a problem left, right, and center today here. It's all about conformity. The cancel culture is pervasive on every level. If you disagree with me, you are cast out. You are ostracized. You are condemned. And there is not much of a debate going on anymore here. It's just arguing, people screaming, my facts versus your facts. How do you get people to find facts in a world of alternative facts, of fake news, of everybody just immediately assumes that whatever you're saying is false if it disagrees with me?
So I teach people, I try to teach them the multiple design laws, how reality actually works. In my ministry, we teach something called the integrative evidence-based approach, which harmonizes three separate threads of evidence: scripture, threads of evidence, science, which are the laws of nature and science, and life experience, how reality actually works. And when you find that all three of those threads come to the same conclusion, you can stand on much greater confidence than if you're only standing on one thread. Well, we did this research and the research showed this, but it's actually showing something that's the opposite of what life experience says or what the scriptures say, then you're probably not fully understanding something right. It might be scripture you're misunderstanding, might be science you're misunderstanding, but when all three consistently get the same conclusion, you can have confidence. So I teach people how to identify the design laws upon which reality is operating and how to think for themselves and how to test those in real life experiences. And then when you do that, life can become very predictable and reliable.
So last question, I've said for many years, I don't know when we got to this point, but science and religion seem to be perceived as opposites. Those who are scientific can't be religious, and those who are religious can't be scientific. And yet you look at the earliest scientists, they were trying to prove, discover God's creation, they didn't do it to disprove there was a God. They did it. There must be some intelligent design behind this. Look how intricate it is. Look how well thought it is. But for the last century or so, certainly in my lifetime, if you're based in science, religion, that's just voodoo. And if you're in religion, science, that's just evil secularism. That's anti-God. They're just trying to, you know, I don't see much convergence between those two. And I don't know how we get people back to believing in both.
Yeah, my ministry integrates them both, and there's never a contradiction between the two. Where this started, it started with the Dark Ages church, who was teaching a lot of mythology as reality, and people who were still thinking for themselves and observing the objective world around them and testing reality, challenged some of those mythological doctrines.
Yeah, when Galileo looked at the moon and said, it's not a perfect sphere, they said it can't be, because that's where the heavens are, and that's where God exists, so it can't be.
Right, and so these types of, so the church declared such things heresy. So they started the initial divide. If you have faith, then you don't need evidence and so forth and so on, which then, though, now today, the scientists are much more in a world of denial of reality and believe things that actual science proves to be false, like there is no intelligent creator, because we know that life requires, and this is proven science, three elements in order to have life in any form that we can identify as life. It requires physical matter, it requires energy, and it requires coded information in the DNA or RNA of the living organism. All life requires this. Now, all the godless theories will talk about how Big Bang happened, and we might have gotten energy, we might have gotten matter, and we might have gotten the molecules, the DNA molecules, they will say somehow formed. But having DNA molecules are like having letters of an alphabet. Having letters of an alphabet are not the same thing as having the Encyclopedia Britannica. In order to have life, you have to have the data, the information coded into actionable, usable data by the billions of strands of information on a microscopic level. There is no way that there is any naturalistic explanation for the coding of the information in the DNA of all living organisms. That required an intelligence, and all thinking scientists know it, but the system is rigged now that if anybody tries to publish on creator, designer, science, they are ostracized, they're blackballed, their funding is taken away, they're fired from their position. And so the entire educational system in this world is fraudulent, teaching a godless system of origins that they all know is not true. It requires an intelligence because you can't have life. And so they don't want to reintegrate because it threatens their power base to come back to believe in a power higher than self. And they want to believe that they're the highest authority on earth, and they're not.
But again, and again, I'm not trying to, I suspect you have a more fundamentalist view of religion than I do. I understand with the Catholic Church, my church was a big player in this for many centuries, trying to curtail information and stop it. But today, I think that role has fallen to the fundamentalist churches that continually, if science says something, they say, no, don't listen to climate change or whatever, COVID or whatever, anything is immediately, no, don't listen to science. Science, those are godless people. True God-loving people can't listen to science. Just listen to God alone here.
I don't really hear that coming from Christians today at all. I don't hear that at all. I hear the scientists saying, don't listen to anything that suggests that there is any right reason to believe an intelligent creator.
I hear that too, right? Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't hear people saying, don't listen to the science. I hear people saying the science is being misrepresented to teach something that it doesn't actually teach. So there are facts, there are interpretations of facts. But the Christian community is saying these interpretations of the facts are fraudulent, but the facts themselves are fine. And here's a different interpretation of the facts. For instance, it has been taught for years that the decay rates of radioisotopes, this would be like uranium and other radioisotopes.
Yeah, carbon dating and stuff here.
Well, carbon is different. Or the radioisotopes, which decay over billions of years, prove that this Earth is billions of years old, because they say that these things decay at a constant rate. That's right. What's been told for. But now we've discovered only in the last 10 or 15 years that, in fact, the decay rate of these radioisotopes change based on the amount of solar radiation that is coming off of the sun. So when you have solar flares, the decay rate accelerates. So if, in fact, there were periods of time when we had significantly high solar radiation, then the decay rates would be at a different rate than we see now. So to be able to project back a constant projected date point is in flux because it depends on what's happening with the sun. That's an example where a Christian can look at facts and say, your interpretation of them may not in fact be accurate, and I'm going to challenge that interpretation.
Well, a lot to take apart there. Again, I think that my perception, and I think many modern people's perception of all religions, and I think the more fundamentalist, the more it's less about thinking and more about conforming and following. And it just seems to be, I don't hear people ever say, let's look at faith, use reason and science, and then compare that to the real world experience. Is that really how you see it really working?
That's what I do in Common Reason Ministries. That's exactly what we teach people.
I think that's a phenomenal basis on which to judge things. You have some philosophical, some spiritual, some religious, greater than us view of it. And then you look at the scientific approach and what the facts and studies suggest. And then you compare all three with does any of this work? How does this, let's look around. Is this real? What kind of results am I getting here if I follow any of these systems of belief? It's all about that, isn't it, Dr. Trin? It starts with what we believe. That's, as you said, what you believe means how you feel, and how you feel means what you do, and what you do leads to certain results that you may or may not like.
That's right. And where do you insert the training program?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Do you try and
you insert the training program?
I think try and say, I can't stop you how you think, and I can't get you to think, and I may not want you to think. I want you to think my way and not listen to any other competing worldviews. And therefore we just manipulate people on feeling. Advertising is all based on feeling. You know, you're gonna get on the horse and you're gonna ride and you're gonna feel, and then it's shampoo or something. They get you in a feeling positive state, and then they insert the message. This is how you get there. Coca-Cola, cigarettes.
Very interesting. That's true. Advertising, they're inserting it at the feeling stage.
Yes.
Before even the thinking stage.
They used to talk about features and benefits. That flew out the window. I laugh. I see a girl, beautiful girl with her hair flowing. She's riding a horse. And I think, what is this going to be? Toilet paper, a perfume, cars. You know, it's all about that, evoking that feeling. And once you evoke that feeling, insert message here. This is how you get to that feeling.
Yeah.
It's all about feeling. We live in a feeling-based world, and feelings can never be wrong. You can't tell me my feelings are wrong. You can tell me my facts are wrong.
And I do with my patients all the time.
Yeah.
Feelings can lie. Feelings lie frequently.
Yeah.
And so you may be feeling it, but that feeling may not be accurate at all toward reality. That's why pilots actually have instruments instead of flying by the way they feel.
Yes. And my father was a flyer in the war, late father, and he said, you have to learn to trust your instruments, because there are points, and there are many examples, where you feel you're flying up and you're actually flying down. The feeling, the body gives you the wrong signal. And if you just react to that, you'll fly into the mountain here. You'll fly into the ground. Yeah, very much. Well, we don't want to fly into the ground. Fascinating thing. Take us out, Dr. Trin. What do you want to add to this?
Wow, what is your website?
comeandreason.com.
Wow.
That's pretty radical right there. We don't want to come and reason anywhere here anymore.
comeandreason.com. I'm going to put that in our little Facebook chat group here. And very cool. This is very thought-provoking today.
Well, particularly because you approach it in a very faith-based way. I appreciate that. And usually I don't hear reason as part of faith. Reason is the resistance of trust, believe, don't listen to any others, discount how you feel, discount the way the world is. I'm telling you, this is the way to salvation here.
What you've described, it's out there, but we reject that as an approach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm fascinated to hear that. And nice, I personally resonates with me. So
same here. Nice to see reason and faith and all that together, as it should be.
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much. And the name of the book is what? You got a couple of them out there?
The Aging Brain, Proven Steps to Prevent Dementia and Sharpen Your Mind, and The God-Shaped Brain.
The God-Shaped Brain. I'd be fascinated.
God-Shaped Brain. Is that on Amazon?
Yes, book? They are.
The Aging Brain and the God-Shaped Brain, Dr. Jennings.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Jennings, for giving us a totally different approach that has at least to me, and I'm perhaps to some of our audience, a refreshing hope of bringing back together faith, reason, and experience. And you say, if all three are in line, then maybe you're on the right path here. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. All right.
Well, there you have it, another great example of the kind of reasoned approach that we try and approach here on this station, in this show, right here on Health Talks, where we try and give you some healthy debate and healthy discussion to help you live a healthier life. On Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California, Irvine's Applied Innovation Center.